Well, over the last few weeks in our series called Staying Power, we've been talking about how to grow in faith by making and keeping spiritual commitments. Some people find it hard to grow in their faith. They may come to church every Sunday, they may say their prayers every night and give money to the poor, but somehow they still don't experience spiritual growth. It's a mystery, and it's often frustrating to the person themselves. And I think that a lot of times when people try but don't make spiritual progress, it's because they might be a little afraid, like a lot of us, like me, to break out of their comfort zone and take a next step in their faith, maybe go to a slightly deeper level. There's something about staying comfortable that makes us feel comfortable. But sometimes spiritual growth is uncomfortable, and it has to be uncomfortable if we're going to grow. But it's worth it. It's worth it. Indeed, as we've been saying, our most important objective in life is to grow in faith. It's more important than anything else. It should be our first priority above the rest of life's obligations, because if we focus on spiritual growth, everything else in our life just becomes more fulfilling. But as we've also been saying, like anything else in life, you can't grow in faith if you don't make a commitment to it. And so each week in this series, we're looking at a different step or a different form of spiritual commitment that you can take to grow in faith if you want to. Now, so far, we've looked at the most challenging of all of these steps, which is sharing your faith with other people. That's really hard. It's not an easy thing to do. It can be intimidating. No one wants to come off looking like a spiritual bully or an armchair theologian. But as we said, you don't have to have a theology degree. You don't have to impose your beliefs on other people in order to share your faith. All you have to do is invest in the people around you who don't have faith, and then when the time is right, lovingly and humbly invite them to church, or invite them at least to watch church online with you. Then last week, we looked at the most useful of all the steps, which is serving in a ministry or a mission. You know, when you serve God through the church, you're being useful to God by being of use to other people who are in need. The great commandment that Jesus taught us is to love God and to love our neighbor. And the most tangible way that we can do that is through service and works of mercy. And so last week, we also invited you to consider joining a ministry or a mission right here at St. Hilary. There's lots of opportunities to serve here, and you can check them all out on our website at sthilary.org. So we've covered the most challenging of all the steps, and we've also covered the most useful of all the steps. And this week, I want to talk about a step, a spiritual commitment that just might be the most influential for your own spiritual life. Now, I want to start off by telling you that, you know, you probably know this already if you know me at all, I have no interest in sports. I never played sports. I don't follow them. I don't understand them. But other people I know love sports, and they use sports analogies all the time. So sometimes I find myself using sports analogies as well, just to kind of, you know, fit in and seem cool. So I might say something like, you know, that idea was right down the fairway. Or, you know, that decision was a Hail Mary pass. When I'm in a leadership team meeting, I might say something like, now who's going to play point guard on that project? And the thing is, I generally have no idea what I'm talking about. Like when I once said that we could hit a home run with that new idea, but we'd have to make sure that we get it into the end zone. Made no sense at all. Anyway, my point is this. When we spend time with people, in my case, sports-obsessed people, we become more like them, whether we want to or not. The people in our lives just somehow pull us in their direction. In fact, there's an old adage, show me your friends and I'll show you your future. Your friends will influence, if not determine, the quality and direction of your life. And if that's true, and if you do want to grow in your faith as a follower of Christ, it stands to reason that you need to be with people who walk with you in your walk with the Lord. Think about this for a second. I was just talking to our master of ceremonies about this in the sacristy before Mass. Our great, probably every one of your great grandparents lived in a mostly Christian culture. It was normal to go to church. It was normal to have religion, to have faith. We don't live in that world anymore. And if the only contact that you have with other Christians is once a month or once a week or a few times a month here at church, and the rest of your time you're immersed in a completely secularized post-Christian world that is often hostile to your faith, then you are more or less trying to live your faith all alone and on your own. And that's a very difficult thing to do. And so it's nice to belong to a church and everything and see people that you know or at least you recognize on Sunday. But you also need to be known and loved and supported on a deeper level. Without Christ-centered friendships in our lives, our walk of faith is slower and less steady, and we're more likely to fall and fail. When we have friendships in which Christ is a central part, then we just do better. That's because we grow in faith through relationships. In other words, we need friends in faith. Now, you may have friends in faith, and I hope you do. I hope you have people with whom you regularly discuss matters of faith. But if you don't, we have a strategy at St. Hilary for helping you develop friends in faith. It's called small groups. And we think that one of the basic steps that you can take for spiritual growth is getting into a small group. On Sundays, you know, you sit in rows here, and you're pretty much forced to listen to me, whether you like it or not. But in small groups, you sit in a circle, and people share with each other. It's so incredibly simple and low-key, and yet small groups help to form connections and relationships that are incredibly helpful in growing spiritually as a follower of Jesus Christ. Now, I know that over the years, over the last few years, I have hammered you over and over again, trying to talk you into joining a small group. And maybe some of you who come regularly are pretty sick of hearing it. I understand. But I need you to know why I'm so passionate about it. It's because over the last 6 years that I've been promoting small groups in this parish and my last parish, I have seen story after story of people who have benefited from the support of a small group. I have seen people disconnected from church, from faith, and at the end of their rope, come alive in a small group. I have seen people who have come to trust the people in their group and couldn't imagine their lives without them. And Maria's story is no different. Let me tell you about Maria. Maria came to the United States on a Fulbright scholarship to Stanford University. She's no dummy. And after she graduated from Stanford, she went into business and rose through the ranks to become a successful business executive at a high level. Then she married and she had a daughter. And eventually she decided to become a stay-at-home mom. She wanted to invest everything in her daughter. And when her daughter was a teenager, unfortunately, Mary's husband met someone else and filed for divorce. It's a story as old as time. And he left Maria with no means of support during the divorce proceedings. A month later, Maria came to one of our small groups. We have a small group that offers support for divorced and separated people. She found instant friends in faith, people she could count on. She felt loved and accepted. But then the story took a difficult turn. Within a couple of months, Maria was diagnosed with breast cancer. It was a very serious case, an aggressive form of cancer. There was no avoiding it. Maria had to undergo a full bilateral mastectomy if she wanted to save her life. The pain was excruciating, and she was incapacitated for weeks after the surgery. And because her extended family lived in Venezuela, Maria had no support system here other than her new small group friends. The leader of that group drove her to the hospital and waited 5 hours while she underwent surgery. And members of the group took turns for 2 months after that, bringing groceries to Maria's house and cooking for her and her daughter every night. They cleaned her house, took Maria to doctor's appointments, drove her daughter to school every day. But when Maria finally got back on her feet, she faced a new problem. She was unemployed and had no income. Because she had been a full-time mom for so long, she knew it would be really difficult to get back into the work world without any recent experience. So one of the members of the group came to her rescue, and she was able to give her a part-time job so that she would have some recent work experience on her resume. Over time, Maria managed to leverage that into a full-time job with a great company who just now has relocated her to their headquarters in Austin, Texas. Last week, Maria said goodbye to her group and to me. At the end of the day, the story had a happy ending. And looking back on it, I honestly don't know who benefited the most. Maria, who experienced the kindness and loyalty of her friends in faith, or the other members of her group who were given the opportunity to help serve and support her. But what I do know is that none of that would have happened if Maria had never joined that small group. That's the power of small groups, and there are countless stories like that one. The story in the gospel passage today captures, I think, the essence of what a small group is all about and why we should join one. In the story, you might remember, we just heard it in the gospel, Jesus, you know, he stops off at a small village called Bethany, which is about 2 miles outside of Jerusalem. He's headed down to Jerusalem. And in that village, Bethany, he meets two sisters, Martha and Mary, and they welcome him. Now, Martha immediately busied herself with the traditional female role of providing hospitality, which, you know, was a core value for people in the ancient Near Eastern culture. It's just what they did. In fact, that's what we heard in the first reading today with Abraham when he welcomes three travelers coming through the desert. He gave them radical hospitality. Of course, it was his wife Sarah who did all the work, but what else is new? Anyway, in the gospel story, Martha eventually whipped herself up into a frenzy because she was trying to provide this great hospitality. She was intent on providing the best food and drink for Jesus. And she had good intentions. It was a good thing she was doing, but she took her stress out on her sister, who was showing Jesus a different kind of hospitality. Mary had assumed the posture of a disciple. While Martha was banging the pots and the pans in the kitchen, Mary was listening to Jesus speak. Although Martha was too busy to pay attention, Mary focused on what Jesus had to say. And so, up to her eyeballs with work, Martha finally lashes out. "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me by myself to do the serving? Tell her to help." Now, over the years, as I've given homilies on Martha and Mary, there are always people who come up to me afterwards and say, "Martha was doing a great thing." They always try to defend Martha. And Martha was doing a good thing. She was doing the right thing. But you can't deny what Jesus said to her. He gently corrected her. He said, "Martha, Martha, you're so anxious and worried about all these things. Listen, there is need of only one thing. Mary has chosen the better part." Now, if you're like me, you may feel like a big ball of stress and wound up tighter than a rubber band a lot of times with all of the things that you have to do and all the people you have to please and all the errands you have to run and all the events you have to attend. That's the way Martha felt. And it kept her out of a small group. It kept her out of a small group that was forming right in her own living room. Jesus and Mary started a small group. They were becoming friends in faith. Jesus was leading the group, of course, but they were becoming friends in faith. And Martha, I'm sure, was invited to that group, but she just couldn't get past everything she thought she had to do to stop long enough and take the time to grow in faith with friends in faith. You know, none of us in this life will ever be able to sit at the feet of Jesus and listen to him speak as Mary literally did. But we can learn from each other. We all come at faith with different perspectives and backgrounds and experiences. All of us have some unique perspective we can share. Whether you grew up in church and have taken your faith seriously for a long time, or are just now getting into it, you have something to offer other people about faith. And small groups are the very place and the very opportunity to share the wins and challenges of life and the ups and downs that you are experiencing, and to share them with people that care. And so if you're in a small group now, I just want to encourage you, because I know it's not always easy, especially at first. If you're having scheduling issues or personality issues, which does sometimes happen, we can always work with you to switch to a different group that's a better fit. Some of you may have been in a group at some point and then kind of fallen out because you had a bad experience. And we know that happens from time to time, but maybe it's time to try again. And for those of you who are ready to think about joining a group now, you can talk to me after Mass. I'd love to chat with you about it and get you in touch with the right person. Or you can check it out on the Next Steps section of our website at sthillary.org. Or you could just get your phone out right now. I'd love to see a lot of phones. And just text the word small groups to that number on the screen. There's no commitment. We'll just reach out to you and we'll talk about maybe what you want to do. Look, we know that you are busy in the kitchen with so many things that you have to do. But remember, Mary chose the better part. She chose to join a small group and listen to the Lord. And you can too. You can sit at his feet and you can learn from him when you share your life with your friends in faith.